welcome to Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today we are doing this as part of Coverthon, the one-day marathon, cover song marathon, and podcasting marathon to raise money for Alzheimer's research and some for Coverville operating costs. And I am joined, or we are joined today, by two members of the Peanut Gallery. We have Uncle George Doro.
Hey there.
And Crazy Dave, neighbor Crazy Dave. I don't want to give your last name so people can't hunt you down.
Oh, they should.
Very good. And the topic today is, it's not just one band at a time today. It is girl groups of the 50s.
You're already breaking the rules.
I'm already breaking the rules. Well, I mean, that's, you know, we have a slogan. We came up with that before we decided we were going to branch out of
it. Yeah. If we'd stuck with a slogan, we'd be done by now.
That's right, exactly. Because we would only been able to do one band. 50s and 60s and maybe a little bit of a nudge into the 1970s. But girl groups certainly were at the height of their popularity in the 50s and 60s. Very few female vocal groups, especially black groups, were recording as early as 1954, the dawn of the doo-wop sound. But by its heyday in 1956, labels such as Mercury and Capitol Records were signing all-girl groups.
And there was also, when I was doing research, there was this weird time in the late 60s where the girl groups had one male member.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they had like token testicles going on.
Tokesticles. Was it like a vocalist or just
no, he was a singer
drummer
too. Yeah,
or...
no, he was part of the group. Hmm. It was like the reverse Gladys Knight and the Pips.
Well, when you think about a lot of these groups like Diana Ross and the Supremes or the Ronettes or the Chiffons, the difference between them and stuff like the Bangles and the Go-Go's is they would be vocalists and there still would be a band playing behind them.
Yes.
Whereas the Go-Go's, the Bangles were all playing their own, were all playing instruments. They were playing their own instruments.
In theory.
I think Dave is going to sleep. So I mean, it could have been, so those bands could have been male members in those bands and you never would have given it a second thought because it wasn't the Chiffons, the
yes.
three women
yep.
that you were expecting to yep. see performing.
Yep.
Mostly classified from 1955 to 1959, the classic period. And then the second period starting, use the term period, second phase, starting in 1962 and running into the late 60s. Okay, Dave. Original doo-wop girl groups sounds later played a large role in what would become the Motown sound. And that, you know, you look at Martha Reeves and the Vandellas, you look at Diana Ross and the Supremes, very good examples of that. There were over 1,500 girl groups estimated that recorded music in the 1960s. Only about two dozen out of that number went on to become famous hit makers. The Shirelles, for example, their first popular hit to enter the charts was Tonight's the Night, which was co-written by lead singer Shirley Owens and entered the top 40 back in 1960. The Crystals, which were signed by Phil Spector and were a musical powerhouse from 1961 to 1963. The Marvelettes had the first girl group act for Motown, as well as the first Motown group, number one, with Please Mr. Postman, which was covered by the Beatles, very famously. The Ronettes, the girl group that Phil Spector became especially attached to was a new group from New York, Spanish Harlem named the Ronettes. They were one of the main girl groups of the 1963-1964 period, turning out a series of hit songs that helped define that era. We'll talk about some more of these, but I wanted to stop on the Ronettes. So out of all of these, the Ronettes gets its name from Ronnie Spector, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Lead singer.
That's what I think, yeah.
Whereas the Chiffons, the Crystals, the Marvelettes were just names for generic names for these girl groups that weren't tied
to... In most cases, the manager came up with the name.
Right, yeah.
Let's call you guys the Doilies.
Right, exactly. But I mean, it's, you know, Diana Ross, it could have easily, following this logic, she could have been the Diana Ross and the Rossettes or something like that. You
the
know,
Diana Ross experience.
Yes, very good. Some more of these, Martha Reeves and the Vandellas. Big hit single, of course, was Heat Wave, Quicksand, Dancing in the Street, Nowhere to Run.
Now, is Dancing in the Street the one that was done so well by the Rolling Stones?
It wasn't the Rolling Stones. No, it was just Mick Jagger and David Bowie.
Yeah.
And by so well, so awkwardly?
Yes, I've got a tongue firmly planted in my cheek when I said that.
Yes, very much so.
I could see it from here.
Yes. The Orlons. Who did the Wawatosee? Is that the Orions? No, it's the Orlons.
Yeah.
The Wawatosee, Don't Hang Up. I know that one. And South Street. The Cookies, Chains, Don't Say Nothing Bad About My Baby. The Chiffons, they started together in high school. He's So Fine was their first hit in 1963. The Bobettes, the Ponytails, the Blossoms, the Chantels, and of course, the Supremes, the first girl group to have a number one on the charts. Major hits from 1964 to 1967, where they released 15 singles and all but one was a top 10 hit. 10 of them went to number one. So they started out as the Supremes, and then it became Diana Ross and the Supremes, kind of letting her take center stage, sort of like George Michael and Wham.
And like what happened with a lot of the bands, you know, even in the early 2000s, where one member stood out because they were clearly the one that the label or the group was trying to push as the star. I mean, actor boy from the boy band.
Jared Leto?
No, no. He's friends with Jimmy Fallon. Man, I'm blanking on his name.
Timberlake?
Yes, Justin Timberlake.
Right.
He could have been Justin Timberlake in the NSYNCs.
Right, it totally could have been, yeah. Or they could have changed the name of the band to the Timberlakes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, like the idea behind naming the groups. They never went, you know, the Cookies is kind of getting a little closer to, like, you know, they're a band named the Broads or something like that.
Well, the Cookies is a really crummy name.
It is. Oh, jeez.
I thought it was rather sweet.
Okay.
What is he, baked?
Now you're playing. Now you're doing.
Now you're playing the game.
Now you got this. And then the Iquettes. They performed behind Ike and Tina Turner, but they also released albums on their own. I did not realize that there were the Iquettes.
And here's the thing: is there are 45 different members of that band throughout the course of that career.
Oh,
they just a revolving door of people in and out.
Wow. Okay. So kind of like the Menudo of backing vocalists.
Yeah. 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 It's pretty nuts that there were so many. When I read that, I had to read that like four or five times to make sure I was not getting it wrong.
That is crazy. And then the Mermaids did a song called Blue Dress.
Yeah. And it's actually a pretty cool little song. I was unfamiliar with it, but when I was digging around, I felt kind of compelled to put it on there because I feel like people need to hear it. It's actually kind of a cool song.
I don't know that one at all. It's Mermaid spelled M-U-R.
Yes.
M-A-I-D-S.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I guess murmur or something.
Yeah, mermaid. Like their heart. Your heart. Right. It was done by a guy with a bad heart.
I've got a heart mermaid. Don't mind if I do. All right. So we were tasked, you and I were tasked with coming up with, thank you very much, covers of...
So this was interesting. We've done this actually on the show a couple of times where we've most notably with Leonard Cohen, when we would say the song that we liked, but then mention the band we'd like to cover it. Well, in this case, correct, we actually did that and followed through and actually listed not just the songs that these girl groups did, but we listed the covers that we liked of them.
That's right. And not only are we going to list these for you, because this is Coverthon, we're going to play all of them for you. And I mean, I guess when we do this, I usually go first. Do you mind if I go first?
You go right ahead. It's your show. All right. It's your basement.
It is my basement. All right. I'm going to start with not really an easy one. Oh, you know what? No, I take that back. I'm going to start with the one that's kind of breaking the rules, because we were talking about girl groups of the 50s and 60s. This is a cover of a song that came out in 1974 by a girl group that was formed in the 60s, a band out of Philadelphia called 3 Degrees. This is a cover by one of my favorite vocalists, a guy, you know how you have a lot of musicians who are British, but when they sing, they don't sound British.
Mm-hmm.
or Australian, you know, Australian singers. Billy Bragg sounds British when he sings. There's like no hiding Billy Bragg's accent. This is his cover of the song by the Three Degrees, When Will I See You Again? We'll be back on the other side of this.
Tonight you're mine completely. You give your love so sweetly. Tonight the light of love is in your. The only one, yeah. But
was three or four different versions of her cover of Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow, which was originally done by Carole King, but the Shirelles had the big hit with her. I guess it was written by Carole King, because then she released her version. Did she put it on Tapestry, her version of Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow? I remember her version.
I can't swear to it.
It came out later than the Shirelles version, though, for sure. And Amy Winehouse does that acoustic version, which was included on the soundtrack of Bridget Jones' The Edge of Reason. The only interaction I've ever had with the movie Bridget Jones' The Edge of Reason is buying that soundtrack. That's it. but it's
but
got that.
You said you earned some respect for Winehouse.
Winehouse for sure. I think she, after seeing the documentary and seeing how it was an external influence that really pulled her down, that really screwed things up for her, I have a newfound respect for Amy Winehouse. I've always loved her style of vocals, but I always thought the drug addiction just turned out to be such a waste of talent, like such a disappointing waste of talent. And from the documentary, it seems like she didn't have as much control over that as she should have.
Just so you know, I'm here for you.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate that.
I don't want to be your outside
you're the devil on my right shoulder. Are you kidding me? And then we also heard a cover of When Will I See You Again by 3 Degrees. That was performed by Billy Bragg. That version right there came from his Must I Paint You a Picture, and has much more, I feel like, a much more upbeat tempo than the original one.
And 95 Degrees later, they turned into a boy band.
Well done. By the way, you notice how we keep the alliteration just by default? It's boy band and girl group.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You never say girl band or boy group. You say boy band, girl group.
Yeah, it's true. Mm.
Some good selling right there. Yeah, somebody, whoever's in charge of that. All right. I've got two more to play. This first one, if you've seen the movie There's Something About Mary, then you're going to be familiar with this guy. He was the part of the Greek chorus of that movie. Sometimes he was up in a tree. Sometimes he was walking along a pier and getting shot when they were trying to shoot Brett Favre. Was it?
Favre.
Or you might be familiar with him because of songs like Roadrunner and Back in Your Life. And, the guy is, such a unique performer. As a matter of fact, Chris Brown, who I believe is on his way to the basement now, actually saw him in concert. And then after the show, they had an empty seat at their table. Jonathan Richman just basically came off stage or went backstage, came back out and just sat at their table and didn't say anything. Just kind of sat with them. They said, really good show. Oh, thank you very much, or something like that. Anyway, it is Jonathan Richman and the Modern Lovers. Here's their cover of the Ronettes' Chapel of Love, which was also very famously covered by the Dixie Cups.
You know, last time I saw Chris Brown, he was naked.
Spring is here, the sky is blue, and the birds all sing as if they knew. Today's the day we'll say I do, and we'll never be lonely anymore, because we're gone to the chapel and we're gonna get married. Gone to the chapel and we're gonna be married. Time, and we'll never be lonely.
The Flying Lizards and their cover of Then He Kissed Me, originally by the Crystals, and kind of like Altered Images. The Flying Lizards found a sound and then they just stuck to it and said, nope, this is as good as it's going to get. Actually, I guess you could say that about Jonathan Richman as well. But there's something just really charming about Jonathan Richman. I mean, it feels like the Flying Lizards and Altered Images do what they do because it's wacky, kind of a Grace Jones, Yoko Ono, you know, we're trying to create some sort of weird performance art thing. Jonathan Richman to me always felt like, no, this is, I sound great. What are you talking about? You know, this is what I sound like kind of thing. And we're joined by Chris Brown, who we just talked about at the end of that set for crazy timing, by the way.
He smells good. You don't
take a note.
Yeah. Wow. Slide that microphone a little bit more towards Chris Brown. Any comments about Jonathan Richman?
Well, you said that you just mentioned that. Unfortunately, I was driving here,
right,
and missed the last 2 minutes of your segment. But Jonathan Richman is a favorite of mine from 1975, The Modern Lovers. Mm-hmm. And Roadrunner.
Roadrunner, Roadrunner.
And so many of his quirky classics over the years. And yes, we went to a concert and he just sat down with us and said, "How's it going?" And we were shocked, but enjoyed a cocktail and some conversation, and then he went back.
That's awesome. Oh, so it was in between his?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's even better.
Yeah, he went back.
So when people describe something as quirky, that typically doesn't mean good.
Wait, hold on, Hammond, one second, because they can't hear you. Go ahead.
No.
Oh, okay. All right, go ahead, Hammond.
When people describe something as quirky, it doesn't typically define it as good.
Well, it doesn't define it as good or bad. I mean, I would say
that... I have a quirky sense of humor.
Yeah, but I would say Tim Burton is quirky.
Thank you, Dave.
And I like Tim Burton a lot. I would say Christopher Walken is quirky. Oh, sure. I don't think
he's of Twin Peaks.
Right, exactly. Twin Peaks, very quirky. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it's good or bad.
Okay, all right.
You think it's like you equate it to, oh, that's interesting.
Yes, it's the word people used instead of bad.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I'd say quirky doesn't fit into that. Okay. At least,
you guys,
Zooey Deschanel, great example, art engineer. Zooey Deschanel is quirky, but she's good.
You guys are far kinder than the people I hang out with. Then.
Well, okay. You're quirky, aren't you? Quirky, Hammond. So I'm going to put your songs. Do you want me to just do 1, 2, 3, 4 in the order you gave them to me?
Yeah, let's just do that.
Okay.
If you don't, I will be talking about something that probably won't fit.
That's exactly what why I'm doing it that way. So I will let you do setup on your song number one.
Okay, so I really like the Martha and the Vandellas version of the song Nowhere to Run. And it took me a while to find one. And so it took me a while to find a version of it that I thought kind of matched the original feel. And then I found the Grand Funk Railroad version of it. So I picked the Grand Funk Railroad version of Nowhere to Run.
Very cool. All right, we're pulling this one up right now. Grand Funk's Nowhere to Run from their album What's Funk. Here it is.
I know you're no good for me.
picking on me.
Tell me about that one.
So I will tell you first a little story. The reason that I pick this song and continually pick this song is a song that I want to hear and want to talk about is because when I first started working at the jail, that was a nickname that was given to me by the officers. And it was before I grew the goatee. And my take away the goatee, I've got a pretty round head and it kind of fits. So it's kind of a theme song slash nickname thing for me. But the reason I like this one is because I love the original song. It's a fun song. I've heard versions of it by ska bands. You know, Stretch Armstrong does a good cover of it. And when I found out that a girl group, an actual in the time period girl group did a cover of it, I had to pick it because it's a great way to kind of celebrate girl groups and the original.
It totally is, yeah. So the original was done by the Coasters, mm-hmm. who also did Yakety Yak.
Mm-hmm. And then this one's done by the Cordettes.
The Cordettes. Cordettes also did a version of Mr. Sandman, right? Am I thinking of
Yes, they actually did the original.
Oh, they did do the original. Yeah, okay. And I don't know why I always attribute that to...
We're talking about that one later.
Like, oh, really? Okay, well, we'll talk about that later. But this is an interesting thing George brought up. Is that it's not actually about Charlie Brown from Peanuts.
Yeah, I heard him say that, and it made my heart break.
The according to Wikipedia, the song came out about 10 years after Peanuts, the comic strip, had debuted, and it hadn't reached its peak of popularity yet. So it was just some dude named Charlie Brown who had unfortunate luck and happened to be the same kind of unfortunate luck that that the Peanuts character
Sounds like he set fire to the gym trying to kill all his schoolmates.
Yeah, I guess maybe Charles Schulz wouldn't have had that in mind as a character, as a story arc for Peanuts.
You can't imagine Charlie Brown walking into the classroom going, "Hey, Daddy-O."
Yeah, that's true. Good point. All right, so, excellent. Let's get.
So now we're going to go into the part of my set that's more tongue-in-cheek, more humorous maybe, less serious. I don't know. Sure. I picked a song by the Shangri-Las, and I heard George talking earlier saying we skipped them. So do you want to give a little information on the Shangri-Las?
Well, Shangri-Las, this was kind of the original version of this was obviously their biggest hit. Mm-hmm. This was also one of the trend of the day, which was teen death songs.
Yes.
So you had like Jan and Dean, Dead Man's Curve. You had Last Kiss by Cochran, Wayne Cochran. Is that right?
I think so. That sounds right.
Eddie Cochran.
Eddie Cochran, right.
And there were all these songs about Teen Angel, another one, about kids dying, usually in traffic accidents.
Yeah, it was
kind of like a PSA. There wasn't like a, you know, a song about I love Johnny and his leather jacket. Too bad that piano fell on him.
It's so kind of like
was always... he kept smoking and died of cancer.
Right, exactly.
It's kind of like the musical version of Blood on the Asphalt.
Right, it really is, and it was probably. I could easily see it being the record label's idea of doing a song that's a hit and also a PSA at the same time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I don't know if that's true or not, but it sure feels like it could be true.
But what said more about being a teenager than girls, cars, and rock and roll?
Yeah, right.
And premature death.
Yep. And premature death. Yep. Live fast, die young, leave a good-looking corpse. Yeah. Right.
So this
the
song
pistols.
That... This What's song that? That we're
the Pistols.
The Pistols, right.
And you guys forgot alcohol on that list.
Yes. Well, Well, I mean,
we knew you'd cover that.
Well said. All right, so now you can set this one up.
So this is Twisted Sister's version of Leader of the Pack.
Here it is from their album Come Out and Play.
Time!
All right, that's a lot of fun. Very good choice. Blind Guardian and Mr. Sandman. Tell me about that pick.
So the reason I picked Blind Guardian is because I have to have a prog group in there somehow. And Blind Guardian covered Mr. Sandman on one of their Hobbit-themed albums. They seem to do a lot of those. I think this was like Tales from the Shire or Bilbo Baggins' Blue Darts or something. I don't know. But they're a prog band, and so I picked them. But I like Mr. Sandman. It's got there's a kind of a sweet sensibility to it. And it's one of the more fun, kind of more innocent songs out there.
It's funny because that's one that I always kind of attributed to like Andrew's Sisters or Lemon Sister or Lennon and Sisters or something like that. But it was the Cordettes that did it first. And I think one or two of those bands actually did it after that.
Yeah.
After
them. And then, of course, there's the Enter Mr. Sandman.
That's a whole different story right there. And actually, the combination of those two songs make a very completely different subject song right there. Enter Mr. Sandman. Holy cow.
Love it.
Yes. Very good. Well, that made a great set. And I think the fact that you and I both broke the rules and did four songs instead of three each.
Helped us fill the hour better.
It definitely helped us fill the hour. I can't remember what I had as my fifth that I took out, but that's all right. Probably a good thing that that I don't have it.
Yeah. Well, you told me three, and I added one just in case you couldn't find one of them.
That's funny, because I don't know why I was thinking we were doing five each. Oh, well, worked out perfectly. Very good. So if you want to reach us on Soundography, here's how you do it. You can email us at soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at The Soundography. Our website is soundography.com. You'll find the playlist there, as well as links to buy the songs from Amazon. You'll find a link to listen to the songs on Spotify. And you'll also find a way to support the show on Patreon. If you've got a review, please leave your reviews at iTunes or Spreaker or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. Or if they're a bad review, just let us know. We'll be fine just letting us know. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Emmett saying that just about covers it for this episode of Soundography. Thank you so much. We'll see you next time right here.
Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.